As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome back to the History of Egypt podcast. This is a special series of episodes, the complete pyramid texts, as found in the monument of King Unas in the necropolis of Saqqara. The pyramid texts are Egypt's oldest surviving corpus of religious literature. They probably come from prayers, hymns, and rituals that had slowly developed and accumulated over generations. But the first example of carving these texts in stone comes from the walls of Unas' tomb. Today, I would like to introduce you to the texts themselves, to read, as fully as possible, the passages they include. The Pyramid of Unas is located at Saqqara, just south of the famous Step Pyramid. In 2024, it is open to tourists, and if you are going to the necropolis, I highly recommend seeing this monument. But of course, hieroglyphs are meaningless if you can't get a sense what they're actually saying. So, this series is intended to be a tourist's guide to the monument and its text. The pyramid texts are long. When fully translated, they run approximately 3 hours to read. That's a lot of religion, a lot of arcane references and names. So, to keep it manageable, we are going to tackle it 1 hour at a time. This is part one, beginning in the burial chamber at the heart of Unas Monument. Before we begin, I should explain a few motifs that will appear throughout the text. This will help orient us and make the elaborate religious language easier to understand. If you're up to speed on the Egyptian religion, feel free to skip ahead a few minutes. Otherwise, let's explore. The first thing to keep in mind is the identity of the deceased. In a literal sense, he is Unas, king of southern and northern Egypt, around 2320 BCE, give or take. In a religious sense, though, Unas is not just a king, he is a god. Two gods, in fact. On Earth, when he is alive, Unas is Horus, the one who is aloft, the sky god extraordinaire, and the eternal king of humanity. That is the living identity, which the pyramid texts reference repeatedly as a memory of Unas' time on Earth. Then, following his death, Unas also becomes Osiris. Osiris, the powerful one, became popular in the 5th dynasty, between 2500 and 2300 BCE. You may think that Osiris has always been around, and yes, the stories are probably older than this. But in terms of temples, texts, art, and references, Osiris really becomes visible in the 5th dynasty, and the idea goes that following their death, the king of Egypt transformed from their earthly incarnation, Horus, to a new incarnation. In a word, they became Osiris. As a result, the pyramid texts repeatedly address Unas, not as a king, but as Osiris. Throughout these passages, the hieroglyphs will talk about the Osir Onis, the Osiris Unas. This is his identity as a deceased and now eternal ruler. So our protagonist is the dead king, who is making his way to the next and never-ending world. Where is that world? The Egyptian afterlife is often described as a netherworld or an underworld. It's easy to see why. burial chambers, graves, are usually underground, or at least beneath a huge quantity of stone, like a mountain or a pyramid. And in some texts, from much later in Egyptian history, we do get the sense that the afterlife is somewhere beyond the western horizon, as if the deceased travel as far west as you can go, and then leave our world to enter the next. But, and this is a big but, that's not exactly the case for the pyramid texts. The pyramid texts do reference the west, and the westerners, the deceased. But Unas, the deceased king, has another destination to go to first. The king's soul will not travel directly west. Instead, he will go north. North and up. The pyramid texts are overwhelmingly concerned with the dead king's journey to the sky. The sky is the realm of the gods, the great creators like Atum, the one who is complete, Ra, the sun, Horus, the one who is aloft, Nut, the sky itself as a concept, and many others besides. Unas, as a dead king, is entitled to join the gods in that celestial realm. So, as we will see, there are many references to Unas going up to the sky, joining his brothers and sisters, the deities themselves. So, putting it simply, the Egyptian afterlife is somewhere beyond our world, beyond Earth in a literal sense. But for the pyramid text specifically, the king is going up and joining the gods in the sky. If we keep that in mind, it helps to put the geography in perspective. That sky element has another important motif. Throughout the pyramid text, we will find frequent mention of the imperishable stars. These stars, called the Ichemu Sek, the ones that do not know destruction, are a real thing. The imperishable stars are the circumpolar stars, a category of star that, because of its position relative to the Earth, will never dip below the horizon. Instead, they will circle around the pole without ever dipping away. The circumpolar stars are different depending where you are on our planet, but for the Egyptians, the circumpolars were a pair of stars that, today, are called Kokhab and Mizar. They are part of the Ursa Minor and Ursa Major constellations. I'll put a link in the description if you want to know more. The circumpolar stars, the Ichemu Sek, are important for the pyramid texts because, visually, they never disappear. So they never die. For the religious thinkers of the time, this was a potent symbol of eternity, and a great destination for the dead king's soul. If Unas, or any ruler, wanted to live forever, the imperishable stars were the best place to go. This is an essential component for understanding the pyramid texts, and, in fact, for understanding the pyramid as a structure. The burial chamber of the king beneath the monument is arranged east to west, following sunrise and sunset. But his sarcophagus and his body lying within, those are oriented north to south. The king's head would lie in the northern direction, pointing towards the imperishable stars. And when the soul of Unas rose up from its body and prepared to leave the pyramid to travel to the sky, that soul would go out through the chambers and then follow the passage or corridor that connects the underground rooms with the outside world. The corridor or passage was oriented north to south. So when the king's soul left his tomb every night, he would travel directly towards the imperishable stars. I emphasize this now because it's really key to understanding what is happening in these texts. Unas is not just receiving offerings, not just connecting with the gods. He is going on a journey to a place that never dies. He is going towards the stars that do not ever perish. Finally, one last motif. Throughout the text, you will find references to the gods Horus and Seth. Horus, the son of Osiris, is the eternal king of the living. Seth, the brother of Osiris, is the chaotic villain of the story. Seth murdered Osiris and tried to seize the throne for himself. Horus challenged Seth, and the two engaged in furious battles to decide the fate of the kingdom. It's a long and complicated story, but that battle and those gods, they are central to the tale of Osiris. And since Unas, the dead king, is becoming Osiris, we do see repeated references to Horus and Seth and to their vicious contests. The hieroglyphs will reference injuries and places associated with these two. This is one of our early and most valuable sources for this particular mythology. So if you're into Horus and Seth, or Osiris, there is plenty here to sink your teeth into. But yeah, just keep their story in mind as we go through. It does crop up repeatedly. There are other elements, other things to understand, but I'll mention those later as they become relevant. For now, keep these four motifs in mind. Unas is Horus, but he is becoming Osiris. Following his death, the king is going to join the gods in the sky. In particular, he is going to the north, to the imperishable circumpolar stars. Finally, the dueling gods, Horus and Seth, will appear frequently as part of the religious storytelling. If you keep those motifs in mind, you will be well equipped for the journey. So, prepare yourself. Let us enter the underworld. Let us go to the sky. Let us visit the afterlife of Unas. We begin our story on the south wall of the burial chamber, on your left as you enter the room. The wall is divided in two sections. One, on the left, is covered in hieroglyphs, the pyramid texts. The other part, on the right, has a more ornate, decorative scheme. It resembles a palace. In fact, we call this style a palace facade. And this wall has a secret of its own. When you go into the chamber, the local guide will probably turn off the lights and shine a torch along the south and north walls. There, in the sharp light, you will see the shadowy outlines of a human, a wall carving showing a figure with one arm raised. This is a scene of hunting, the spearing of hippopotami and dangerous animals in the Nile River and marshes. You'll find such an image in many Old Kingdom tombs, the mastabas, constructed by royal family members and high-ranking nobles. But a shadowy version of it also turns up in Unas' burial chamber. This image has its own interesting history, but now is not the time. When the lights come back on, turn your attention to the hieroglyphs. This is where our recitation begins. These passages serve a special purpose. They help Unas, the deceased, to arise in new life. The first section deals extensively with Unas' death, or rather his non-death, his transformation into a new life rather than the end of this one. The hieroglyphs also talk about Unas' body. They provide an inventory of his essential physical parts, head, heart, arms, torso, legs, and so forth. There is a purpose to this. For the ancient Egyptians, the preservation of the body was essential. For the soul to survive in the next world, the physical form needed to remain on Earth. This, fundamentally, is why they mummified the dead with such care and elaborate attention. But of course, no mummy is truly safe. There is always the danger of loss or destruction in the passage of time. So the Egyptians figured out numerous ways to offset that danger, including statues or images of the deceased as a substitute for the body. In the pyramid texts, this substitution is achieved by describing the body of the king. The texts lay out the various features of Unas's physical form. They do this to ensure that his physical body will remain safe and protected by the magic of the hieroglyphs. But failing that, the hieroglyphs themselves can substitute for the body. Should anything happen to the corpse of Unas, the existence of these passages will ensure that a magical version of the body survives. So, these texts deal with the physical corpse of the king. A good place to start his journey to the afterlife. In the numbering system that Egyptologists use, these passages are called spell or utterance number 213 to 216. They are read from right to left, or west to east, on the southern wall of the burial chamber. Quote, O Unas, you have not gone away dead. You have gone away alive to sit upon the throne of Osiris. Your scepter is in your hand so that you may give commands to the living. The handle of your lotus scepter is in your other hand, and you will give orders to those of the mysterious places, that is, the dead. Your arm is that of Atum, your shoulders are those of Atum, your belly is that of Atum, your back is that of Atum, your bottom is that of Atum, your two legs are those of Atum, your face is that of Anubis. The places of Horus will serve you, the places of Seth will serve you. O Unas, beware of the lake. The messengers of your Ka spirit have come to you. The messengers of your father have come to you. The messengers of the sun god Ra have come to you. Go in the wake of the sun. You are to purify yourself. Your bones are those of the female hawks, the goddesses who are in heaven, so that you may be on the side of the god, and leave your house to your son, your creation. Everyone who would speak wrong against the name of Unas when you go up is determined by Geb to be a despised one of his city. That wrong speaker shall flee and fall. You, Unas, are to purify yourself with the cool water of the stars, and you will climb down upon ropes of metal on the arms of Horus in the name He of the Hennu Barge. Humanity mourns and bewails you after the imperishable stars have carried you away. Enter then into the place where your father is, where Geb is. He gives you that which was on the brow of Horus, so that you become powerful and full of splendor on account of it, so that you become the foremost of the Westerners on account of it. O Unas, your messengers go forth, your heralds hurry to your father, to Atum, and they say for you, Atum, let him rise to you, fold him in your arms. There is no god who has become a star without a companion. I shall be your companion. Look at me, you have seen the forms of the children of their fathers, who know their messages, who know their spells, who are now the imperishable stars. May you see the two inhabitants of the palace, that is, Horus and Seth. May you bespit the face of Horus and remove his injury. May you catch the testicles of Seth and remove his mutilation. That one is born for you. This one is conceived for you. You are born, O Horus, as the one whose name is He before whom the earth quakes. You are conceived, Seth, as the one whose name is He before whom the sky shakes. Such a one has no mutilation, that is Horus. Such a one has no injury, that is Seth. Such a one has no injury. Such a one has no mutilation. So, you have no injury. You have no mutilation. You are born for Osiris, O Horus. You have become even more splendid than he. You have become even more powerful than he. There is no seed of a god that has perished, nor has he who belongs to him. You will not perish who belong to him. Ra Atum does not give you to Osiris. Osiris does not reckon your heart. He has no power over your breast. Ra-Atum does not give you to Osiris. He has no power over your breast. Osiris, you cannot have power over Unas. Your son cannot have power over him. Horus, you cannot have power over him. Your father cannot have power over him. You belong, O deceased one, to this god, as the twins of Atum said. Lift yourself up, so they said, in your name, which is the god. And so you become Atum for every god. Your head is that of Horus of the underworld. Your brow is the one with the two eyes. Your ears are those of the twins of Atum. Your eyes are those of the twins of Atum. Your nose is that of a jackal. Your teeth are those of Sopdu. Your arms are those of Hapi and Duamutef, which you will need to ascend to the sky. And you do ascend. Your legs are those of Imseti and Kebesenuef, which you will need to descend to the lower sky, and you will descend. All your body parts are those of the twins of Atum, O imperishable one. You did not pass away. Your Ka spirit does not pass away. You are a Ka spirit. Now, the hieroglyphs turn away from the body of Unas, and they focus outward. We get passages describing the king's journey through the nighttime sky. He rides a bark or boat among the stars, and we get more references to specific stars, including recognizable bodies and constellations like Sothis and Orion. We also start meeting the gods. When the king, Osiris Unas, reaches those stars, the gods themselves come forth to welcome him. In these passages, we meet the deities who reside in the sky realm. These passages name the major deities one after another, and it may get confusing if you're unfamiliar with these figures. I've included a link to a handy chart in the episode description, but for now, here is a quick summary of the most important names. The gods come from nothing, from the infinite primordial waters called Nun and Nunet. Then there is Atum, the creator, the god who made himself and who then ordered the universe. From Atum we have Shu and Tefnut, the lord of light and the lady of moisture. Then we have Nut and Geb, the masters of sky and earth, respectively. From them we have the four siblings, Osiris, Isis, Nephthys, and Seth. These deities order the earthly and the human world, the places that we inhabit. Finally, we have Horus, the ruler of humanity, the avatar of kingship. These gods all have complicated backstories and relationships, but they are referenced repeatedly through these passages. So it's helpful to keep this group in mind. Atum, then Shu and Tefnut, then Geb and Nut, then Osiris, Isis, Nephthys, and Seth. Finally, Horus. Other gods appear as well, like Thoth, Anubis, and the Divine Councils, or Enneads. But if you keep those 10 names in mind, you have a good start. This section is heavy on the repetition, even more than the other parts. I have abbreviated it slightly, because some of these passages are literally the same phrases over and over and over and over and over. So it's slightly shorter than the full hieroglyphs, but you'll get the core meaning. Now then, Unas meets the gods, and they welcome him. These are passages or utterances 216 to 219. Quote, "Someone comes to you, Nephthys. Someone comes to you, Nightboat. Someone comes to you, sailor who is covered in gore. Someone comes to you, place where the Ka spirits are remembered. May you all remember that someone. This is Unas." Orion becomes encircled by the Duat when the one who lives in the horizon purifies himself. The star Sothis is encircled by the Duat when the one who lives in the horizon purifies himself. This Unas is encircled by the Duat when the one who lives in the horizon purifies himself. He is content on account of them. He is refreshed because of them, in the arms of his father, in the arms of Atum. Say the following: Ra Atum, Unas comes to you, an imperishable spirit, the Lord of Dispensation, in the sight of the four papyrus columns. Your son comes to you, this Unas comes to you, so that you both may stride across the sky, united in darkness, that you may rise on the horizon in the place where you wish to be, that is, your pyramid. Seth and Nephthys, hurry forth, announce to the gods of the south and their spirits. He comes, this Unas, an imperishable spirit. If he desires that you will die, you will die. If he desires that you live, you will live. Ra Atum, Unas comes to thee, an imperishable spirit, the Lord of Dispensation. Your son comes to you, this Unas comes to you, so that you may both stride across the sky, united in darkness, that you may rise on the horizon in the place where you wish to be. Osiris and Isis, hurry forth, announce to the gods of the north and their spirits. He comes indeed, this Unas, an imperishable spirit, like the praised star over the Nile, so that the spirits in the waters honour him. If he wills that you live, you live. If he wills that you die, you die. Ra Atum, this Unas has come to you, an imperishable spirit, the Lord of Dispensation. Thoth, hurry forth, announce to the gods of the west and their spirits. He comes forth, this Unas, an imperishable spirit, dressed like Anubis, who rules over the western mountain, so that he may reckon hearts, and that he may have power over breasts. If he wills that you live, you live. If he wills that you die, you die. Horus, hurry forth, announce to the gods of the east and their spirits. He comes indeed, this Unas, an imperishable spirit. If he wills that you live, you live. If he wills that you die, you die. Ra Atum, your son comes to you. Unas comes to you. Let him ascend to you. Enfold him in your embrace. This is the son of your body forever and ever. Osiris, this Unas has come, the son of the Ennead, an imperishable spirit. He will claim minds and take away Ka spirits and bestow Ka spirits according to his reckoning, including whomever he associates to himself or those who petition him. There is none who will be excluded without his bread. Without the bread of his Ka spirit, there will be none who is deprived of his bread. Geb has spoken, and this has come from the mouth of the Ennead, saying, O next falcon, Horus, who acquires the throne of Egypt, they have said, you are the Ba soul, and in control. This Unas has come, the son of the Ennead, an imperishable spirit, who surpassed you and surpasses you, who is wearier than you and yet greater than you, who is healthier than you and more praised than you, and your time there is no more. This is what Seth and Thoth have done, your brothers who do not mourn for you. Isis and Nephthys, come together, unite. He comes indeed, this Unas, the weary one of the nine, an imperishable spirit. The western ones upon the earth are for this Unas. The easterners who are upon the earth are for this Unas. The southerners who are upon the earth are for this Unas. The northerners who are upon the earth are for this Unas. Those who are in the lower sky are for this Unas. This Unas has come, the son of the Ennead, an imperishable spirit. O Atum, your son is here, Osiris, whom you have preserved alive. He lives, he lives. This Unas lives. He is not dead. This Unas is not dead. He has not gone down. He has not been judged. Instead, he judges. This Unas judges. O Shu, your son is here. Osiris, whom you have preserved alive. He lives. This Unas lives. He is not dead. He has not gone down. He has not been judged. Instead, he judges. This Unas judges. O Tefnut, this your son Osiris is here. O Geb, this your son Osiris is here. O Nut, this your son Osiris is here. O Isis, this your brother Osiris is here. O Seth, this your brother Osiris is here. Nephthys, this your brother Osiris is here. Thoth, this your brother Osiris is here. Horus, this your father Osiris is here. Great Ennead, this Osiris is here, whom you have preserved alive. He lives, he lives. This Unas lives. He is not dead. This Unas is not dead. He has not gone down. This Unas is not gone down. He has not been judged. This Unas has not been judged. He judges. This Unas judges. Little Ennead, this Osiris is here, whom you have preserved alive. He lives. He lives. This Unas lives. He is not dead. This Unas is not dead. He has not gone down. This Unas is not gone down. He has not been judged. This Unas has not been judged. He judges. This Unas judges. Nunet, the infinite waters in its feminine form. This your son Osiris is here, of whom you have said, is he born for your father? You have wiped his mouth. His mouth has been opened by his son Horus, who is his beloved. His body parts have been reckoned by the gods. He lives, this Unas lives. He is not dead, this Unas is not dead. He has not gone down, this Unas is not gone down. He has not been judged, this Unas has not been judged. He judges, this Unas judges. In his name of He in Iunu, Heliopolis, who endures forever in his necropolis, he lives, this Unas lives. In his name of he who is in Busiris, the lord of his districts, he lives. In his name of he who is in the mansion of the scorpion, the satisfied Ka, he lives. In his name of he who is in the divine pavilion, for whom offerings are burnt, he who is in the coffin, he who is in the shrine, he who is in the bag, he lives. In his name of he who is in the white chapel of wood, this Unas lives. In his name of he who is in Orion, your time in the sky, your time upon the earth. Osiris, turn your face so that you see this Unas. In his name of he who is in Buto, may your arms be about your meal, about your daughter, and be supplied with her. He lives, this Unas lives. The hieroglyphs of the south wall end here. Well, technically, they end on the next wall, the east. The burial chamber of Unas is just a little bit too small to fit the texts properly onto each appropriate section, so the hieroglyphs go around the corner, literally halfway through a sentence. As we turn that way towards the eastern side of the burial chamber, we are now facing towards the sunrise. That is the world of the living. As a result, the following passages make numerous references to towns and cities within Egypt, places like Hermopolis, or the city of Khemenu, and the city of the lakes near the Fayum region. As we are facing east, we deal, partly, with the world of the living. These are spells or utterances 219 to 222. Quote, may your arms be about your meal, which is your daughter, and be supplied with her. He lives, this Unas lives. In your name of he in the palace of the great Oxen, May your arms be about the meal, which is your daughter, and be supplied with her. He lives, this Unas lives. In your name of he who is in the southern Hermopolis, may your arms be about the meal, your daughter. He lives, this Unas lives. In your name of he who is in the northern Hermopolis, may your arms be about your meal. He lives, this Unas lives. In your name of he who is in the city of lakes, may your arms be about this meal. He lives, this Unas lives. Your body is the body of this Unas. Your flesh is the flesh of this Unas. Your bones are the bones of this Unas. Where you go, this Unas goes. Where this Unas goes, you go. The doors of the horizon open themselves. The bolts slide apart. He has come to you, Red Crown. He has come to you, Flaming Uraeus. He has come to you, Great One. He has come to you, Great of Magic. He is purified for you, and in awe before you. Be pleased with him. Be pleased with his purification. Be pleased with the words that he says to you. These words are, how beautiful is your face when you are satisfied, when you are new and young. A god has given you birth, the father of gods. He has come to you, O great of magic. It is Horus who fought to protect his eye, which is the great of magic. O Red Crown, O Curled One, O Great One, O Great of Magic, O Fiery One. May you make Unas ferocity like your ferocity. May you make Unas fearsomeness like your fearsomeness. May you make Unas praise like your praise. May you make Unas love like the love of you. May you make his scepter at the head of the living. May you make his scepter at the head of the Akh spirits. May you make his knife sturdy against his enemy. O Curled One, you have emerged within him, and he has emerged within you. O Unas, the Great One has given you birth. The Firstborn has adorned you. The Firstborn has given you birth. The Great One has adorned you. For you are Horus, he who fought to protect his eye. Stand up upon this land, which came forth from Atum, which came out of the Becoming One. May you become over it, may you become high over it, so that your father will see you, so that Ra will see you. He comes to you, O his father. He comes to you, O Ra. He comes to you, he comes to you, he comes to you. He has come to you, his father. He has come to you, O Ra. He has come to you, O Fallen One. He has come to you, O Fertilizer. He has come to you, O Raging One. He has come to you, O Great Wild Bull. He has come to you, O He of the Great Boat. He has come to you, O Sapdu. He has come to you, O Sharp of Teeth. May you grant that this Unas grasp the cool waters and receive the horizon. May you grant that this Unas rule over the Nine, the Ennead, so that he may provide the Ennead with their offerings. May you give the staff of the Herder into the hand of this Unas, so that the heads of northern and southern Egypt will bow before him. Unas comes down to meet his enemy, and he stands up, the greatest chief in his great kingdom. Nephthys has praised him after he captured his opponent. You have adorned yourself as the Great of Magic, he who is in Ombos, the Lord of the South, that is, Seth. It will not be lost for you, it will not end for you. Behold, you are full of splendor, Powerful One, even more than the gods of the South, together with their spirits. You, whom the Pregnant One ejected when you cleft the night, you are adorned like Seth, he who came out forcibly. But more happy is the one whom Isis praises. You have adorned yourself as Horus with the two pupils of his eye. It will not be lost for you. It will not end for you. Behold, you are full of splendor, a powerful one, even more than the gods of the north, together with their spirits. O Unas, you release your purification to Atum, who is in Eunu, Heliopolis. you descend with him so that you may decide the needs of the lower sky and stand up in the places of noon, the primeval waters. You come into being with your father Atum. You are high up with your father Atum. You rise with your father Atum. The needs of the Duat are severed from you. Your head is held by the nurse of Iunu, Heliopolis. You go up and open the way through the bones of Shu, the air. The embrace of your mother Nut, the sky, enfolds you, and you purify yourself upon the horizon, and leave that which should be purified in the lakes of Shu. You go up, you go down. You go down with Ra, darkened with the one who was cast down. You go up, you go down. You go up with Ra, and you rise with the one of the great boat. You go up, you go down. You go up with Nephthys, one of the twilight with the night boat. You go up, you go down. You go up with Isis, and you rise with the day boat. You have power over your body. There is no one to oppose you. You are born because of Horus within you. You are conceived because of Seth within you. You have purified yourself in the district of the Falcon, that is the third district of northern Egypt. You have received your purification in the district of the uninjured ruler, that is the 13th district of northern Egypt. You have received this before your father, before Atum. You have come into being, you have become high, you have become a spirit. Cool it is for you in the embrace of your father, in the embrace of Atum. Atum, elevate to yourself this Unas, enfold him in your embrace. For this is your son of your body, forever and ever. We will pause our reading of the pyramid texts here. We've gone through a lot, covering the entire southern wall and part of the eastern wall of the king's burial chamber. More importantly, we have laid the groundwork for the religious iconography and references that are contained in these texts. But it's a lot to take in, so we will take a break. In the next part, we will tackle the rest of the burial chamber, the western, northern, and eastern walls, which contain an elaborate series of offering rituals for the soul of the deceased king. We will also introduce some of the transliterations, that is, the reconstructed ancient Egyptian, as Egyptologists write it. In part two, I'm going to include a few sections where I read the English translation, followed by the Egyptian version. Hopefully, that will allow us to get a greater understanding of the sound of these texts and the rhythm of their uniquely beautiful language. That is part two, releasing in 2 days. Thanks for listening. I'll see you soon.
History isn't black and white, yet too often it's presented as such. Grey History, The French Revolution is a long-form history podcast dedicated to exploring the ambiguities and nuances of the past. From a revolution of hope and liberty to the infamous Reign of Terror, you can't understand the modern world without understanding the French Revolution. So search for The French Revolution today.